or it's always been the Browns. At least that's where I first met him. And you could catch Monsters, you catch Guardians, baseball, high school, man. He is truly a man for all seasons. He is Jeff Shadell, and he is from the News Herald. And right now he is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Jeff.
Good, Andy. How are you? Hey, Dan.
Good. I just wanted to give you a big intro there. Do you have a high school game tonight? You covering a high school game?
No, I'm doing the Cavs.
Oh, that's right, Cavs.
The Monsters tomorrow night and Browns Sunday, so it'll be a fun weekend.
Yeah, you got a lot going on, my friend.
Me too, man. This is the busy time.
Yeah, there really is no non-busy time, but this is the busiest, so that's fine with me.
It beats the alternative, doesn't it? It totally does. All right, so Jeff, let's dive into the Browns here. How much of a mess do you think the locker room is right now? You've covered this team for a long time. I mean, it reeks of 99 with the inability on offense, and then it just feels like drama just keeps building each and every week.
It does, Andy. And, you know, if you really look back, they are 1-11 over their last 12 games, if you include this preseason, because they lost to the Bengals, and, of course, they got crunched in the playoff game. So this team does not have a rut right now.
What do you make of Kevin Stefanski giving up the play calling? I mean, it just seems like bizarre timing, Jeff.
It does seem like bizarre timing. And you know what? I was thinking about this when I was preparing to talk with you guys. When you look back at this season, questioning Kevin Stefanski's play calling, other than that jet sweep by Cedric Tillman, what call do you think? Well, that was really a dumb call. Can you think of one?
Not really. And to be honest with you, was that even Kevin's call at the last second? Didn't they want they wanted Jameis to run a different play, or didn't run a different play when he saw the defense that was stepping up against him, right?
Right. Yeah. So, right, and that's a good point. So I don't think the play calling has been bad. They're not executing on offense, obviously. They don't have any explosive plays. Is that Stefanski's fault? I don't think so. It will be interesting to see what Jameis Winston does. He does have a stronger arm than Deshaun Watson, so we might see something different. But it would be because of that, I think, more than play calling this weekend.
I thought it was interesting when Jameis was talking earlier this week about just like having more street cred in the locker room when you're actually playing. Like, I mean, we've seen him. He's been a rah-rah guy since the moment he walked in the door, right? But if you're not playing, that act gets tired, I think, for other players, guys that are, you know, like, especially if you're not walking around with a bunch of Super Bowl rings around your fingers.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And when he's out there at practice, during the warm-up individual drills, that's all we're allowed to see before we're out, kicked off before team drills. And they'll throw in one direction for maybe 10 passes, and then they go downfield and throw in the opposite direction. When Jameis Winston is out there, he sprints to the other end of the field. Does that make him a leader? Maybe. But let's see what happens when the games count and he has to do it. He has done it in the past. So I think they needed a change. People have been asking for Jameis Winston since the Dallas game, right? And so, of course, now they have to do it.
Jeff Shadell joining us. The News Herald is where you can read him. And, of course, he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Jeff, do you think we're going to see some semblance of a running game come back as well with Nick Chubb being back there? I mean, we saw kind of a little bit of it, but, boy, it definitely wasn't at the level we thought we'd see.
Well, no, he's still working his way back. The offensive line is not as good as it was, obviously. But this is a bad week to expect that to happen because the Ravens have the number one rush defense in the league. They average allowing 68 yards a game. So I don't think we're going to see the old Nick Chubb on Sunday.
It's still like that's like the only good news we've had, Jeff, about this right now, because it's like, man, I think we're just and we're at this weird junction where it's players against fans, and like I said earlier in the show, it's like it's not all the fans. It's a couple of knuckleheads, very loud knuckleheads last week that the players heard on the field, and it's not all the players either that are really, really mad at the fans. And so, I you know, get in the end zone a couple times and win a game, and all this noise goes away.
That's for sure. And you know what, Andy? I think last week when Deshaun Watson was down, it was the fans. They were, yes, they were booing Watson, cheering his injury, but what they were really doing, I think they were channeling that frustration to Jimmy Haslam for signing Deshaun Watson in the first place.
Interesting.
You know, and listen, you think back that he's not the first injured quarterback that they booed. You remember in 2008 when Derek Anderson was injured. This is 1 year after he took the Browns to a 10-6 record, and he got hurt in the Colts game, and fans cheered that. I think that was meaner and louder than what happened with Watson last week.
Trade deadline's about 2 weeks away, Jeff. What do you see the Browns doing there? Is it a full-blown fire sale, or do you think they're going to stand pack, or heck, who knows?
Yeah, who knows is a good. I don't think there's going to be a fire sale. I heard you talking about trading Jameis Winston.
Mm-hmm.
They could do that, but what do you? I don't know what they're going to get for him. I mean, you never get what you think your player is worth, right?
Correct.
How many? It doesn't happen. The pick you get is much lower than you would think the player is worth. Now, they did a great job getting a third rounder, I think, for Amari Cooper, when all they traded to get him was a fifth rounder. So that was a big plus. But I don't, and who really is tradable on this team other than Myles Garrett? You're not going to trade Nick Chubb. And Jameis Winston, I don't think he's going to get you more than a third or fourth rounder, if that.
When you look at this offensive line, and in particular, who do you think is starting at left tackle on Sunday? But the health of this offensive line, and we were talking about the conundrum of, you know, you've got a quarterback that's in a kind of freewheeling out there with Deshaun Watson, so that the offensive line maybe not being in lockstep with him because they just don't know where he's going with it. But you would think that this offensive line, especially if it's a little bit healthier this week, even without Jed Wills, would be better in the running game. But they just this team offensive line has not been able to get in sync at all. And I know injuries are a big part of that.
Yeah, injuries are a big part, Andy. But I think the coaching philosophy from Bill Callahan to Dickerson really is a big part of the problem that the Browns are having. Now, injuries certainly weigh into that. And I think if Wills doesn't play, I think Jack Conklin will probably be at left tackle and Duane Jones over there on the right side. But they can't get the run game going. And here's an interesting stat for this game. Do you realize that the Browns have allowed fewer points than the Ravens? The Ravens have won 5 in a row, yet the Browns have allowed fewer points than the Ravens have.
It makes you think that if Jameis Winston can get this team to 24 points, that they've got a chance to win all these games.
Yeah, that's
and go. I mean, let's talk about it. I mean, they've really only been blown out in two of these games. Otherwise, and I don't think the final score, you know, indicated the way the game was played out last Sunday. But still, if you go back a year from now and you look at it, like, oh, they only lost by a touchdown. Probably had a chance there at the end, right?
Right, and even in that game last week, who would think that the Browns are going to give up a 100-yard kick return for a touchdown on the opening kickoff?
Great point.
And Dustin Hopkins, now he was so good last year. He made 30 of 33 field goals. He was 8 of 8 beyond 50. And this year he's looking more like he had in his past. And I heard you talking about this earlier in the week, Andy. If he makes a field goal, he makes that extra point, it's a whole different game. And how is that on Kevin Stefanski's play calling, just to circle back to that? It isn't.
Jeff, put yourself in Kevin's shoes right now. What's he thinking? Because there's got to be a twist of fate one way or another, because it's, you know, when the chips are down, they're going to point at the quarterback, they're going to point at the head coach, and I think every head coach knows that they're going to have to weather some kind of storm. He's in a storm right now. What's it going to take for him to get out of that storm and still be the head coach next year?
I think next year is the answer to that question. I think if any, if he, I'm not saying anybody's even thinking about firing him in that front office, but if they fire him, that would be silly, in my opinion, because he, we've seen, he knows how to coach. Even in the, last year, you go through four quarterbacks. I don't count Jeff Driscoll at the end, and you win 11 games, which also makes you wonder why Alex Van Pelt was fired. But I think he just has to get through this year, and next season we'll see the Kevin Stefanski that we know. I think they could end up winning five or six games this year. I don't see how they could do much more than that when you look at the teams they have coming up. They still have to play the Ravens twice, the Steelers twice, the Bengals down in Cincinnati, the Chiefs later in the year. But for once, we need to see Jimmy Haslam being patient and get through this season and start over next year.
Jeff, what do you we've kind of kicked around on it, and the offense has been the number one thing that everybody's looked at and complained about. Do you think this defense has taken a half step back, or is it just the offense has been so bad?
Well, I think the defense has given up more explosive plays than we've seen in the past. Martin Emerson is not playing as well as he did last year, and that's part of the problem. The other than Myles Garrett, they're not really getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and they're giving up more. This is the part to me that's baffling, is that they're giving up more explosive run plays, and the defense is relatively healthy. They did have some injuries at safety earlier in the year, but that part is strange to me, that they're not playing better against the run than they have.
Hey, I want to switch gears before we let you go, just because we've got a minute or two. You got the Cavs game tonight. Your thoughts on that? And J.B. Bickerstaff comes back. And, boy, the team played exactly the way we wanted them to play in Toronto. And if they can keep that up all season, that'd be amazing. Toronto's not one of the tougher teams in the East. But still, I think that was the formula. And, you know, really, you just changed coaches.
You know what, Andy? That's exactly right. And Kenny Atkinson just has such a positive energy about him. I'm not saying that J.B. Bickerstaff was not positive, but Kenny Atkinson just has this, the energy comes right off him. And he said at the very beginning, in fact, at the his introductory press conference, how he wanted to get more from Evan Mobley on the offensive end. And wow, we just saw that Wednesday night. And so I think we're going to see that more of that this season. And, again, with this team, a lot of it depends on health. Because when you think about the core four last year played only 28 games together during the regular season and four in the playoffs. So if those guys can stay healthy, I think the Cavaliers are really going to be a threat in the East. Can they beat the Celtics? Who knows? But I think it's going to be a very fun season to follow the Cavaliers.
All right, you want me to get one monstrous question in on there?
Yep, go ahead.
Curtis Hall from Sugar Land Falls. That's kind of excited that he's on the roster this year and you got a local guy on the team. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, man. Fans should go watch the Monsters. It's inexpensive entertainment. The hockey is good, and fans have such a good experience. It's such a family-friendly experience for young kids, and I really enjoy going to those games.
And there you have it. He's a man for all season. He's Jeff Shadell. Make sure you're reading all of his stuff in the News Herald like I do each and every day. Thank you so much, Jeff. Appreciate
you. Take care.
Thanks. Have a good weekend.
We'll talk to you soon. Jeff Shadell, News Herald, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
YouTube is awesome for that stuff. For live streams, it's so easy to find. It's easy to use. Like, it is awesome that you could just click right on there and you get that reaction from the both of you. And especially on home games where the two of you are relatively close together, it's even better.
Yeah, it's also interesting that, like, we went to this central producing site out of New York, and that, you know, it's our producer, Evan O'Brien, on the show right now is, you know, somebody who's, he doesn't have any skin in the game when it comes to the Browns. And so I'm always interested to see, like, what he hears in that podcast that gets put back out on social media, and he does a really nice job with it. So it's definitely worth watching, especially this week. If you really want to know what's going on with the Dome, Daryl has everything. He really does, and he has done outstanding work over the last couple of years on the stadium issue, whether it was a dome or not, or what was going on with the stadium. Daryl really has got his ear to the ground on this thing. I would advise going back, and especially this week, go back and watch or just listen to the podcast. It's Always Game Day in Cleveland, and you'll have, like, there's stuff that I'm not even hearing out here. Like, it's only in the podcast, and Daryl's got, like, I'm just blown away by some of the things that not only he knows, but also his delivery on some of the information. He'll be like, what? I can't believe that you said that. So trust me on that. If you get a chance, listen to the podcast. Last night, the Rams and Vikings played Thursday Night Football. It was nice to have a good matchup on Thursday night, too, that kind of kept me awake.
It was odd. I'm not used to having good football on Thursday night.
But there was one very, very interesting story that came out of the Rams 30-20 win over the Vikings, and I think it brings up a good point, and it's something the league has to look at.
Right. So at the tail end of this game, with about a minute and 42 seconds left, the Vikings got the ball back after a punt. It was down at their 5-yard line.
Okay.
And first down, hey, they tried a little bit of incomplete pass, all that kind of stuff, tried to get Jordan Addison, get a little bit of breathing room, and then second down happened, and this audio courtesy of Westwood One. Again, audio courtesy of Westwood One, and if you have seen any replay of this play, you see every single dead giveaway from pretty much any angle when it comes to the face masking penalty. The fact that you can see the glove go into the face mask, and you can see the head whip around, you see all those things to it, and for some reason, the back judge who was standing right there and had a clear view.
Did he, though? He might have been blocked. I just, because that was the first thing I thought of, because when I went back to go look at replays, especially just now, I went back and looked at it again before because I knew we were going to talk about this. Like, the back judge kind of got blocked out a little bit, but when you see...
But then you got the side judges, you got the judge of the field. Like, there's enough referees on the field that should have been seen.
I agree with you. I don't know how they didn't see that. And by the way, I mean, you know they saw it in the booth because they had to replay the play because it was a scoring play. There's no way they didn't see it in the booth on the scoring play, but... Should they be able to make a call if there was no play on the if there was no flag on the field?
So that's my question out of all of this. Look, we all want to get the call right. We all know we have the technology that is out there to get the call right, but we know it's also a delicate balance into getting calls right mixed with we don't want these games to go on for 6 hours. So there's a delicate balance that is taking place between the two sides of this. Andy, it is a scoring play. Face masking is a personal foul. It was reviewed because it was a scoring play.
Right.
Should we be able to administer penalties on replays? Do you think that's something the NFL should look into?
That was pretty egregious last night. And, right? I mean, that's an egregious foul right there. That leads to points. It's a personal foul. So, yeah, I think they should. That's the whole eye in the sky thing, isn't it? That if you – or that – Well, I don't know, unless a team would have a chance to challenge the play, especially under 2 minutes, should a team be able to challenge that kind of play to reverse the scoring based on a blatant and obvious call that was missed?
See, I think that's the better direction. And the only reason is the last thing we all want is for a coach to throw a flag for a challenge and just go find something. Because we know there's holding on every single play. And I know everyone's going to,
yeah.
Not only just on the Myles Garrett side of things, but like there's holding on every single play in every single game in some way. And so if we're just going to blindly throw challenge flags with the idea that, well, I don't like how this play ended up, so go find something. How many clean plays do we really have?
There are very few. There's very few. Yeah.
So like I feel like you need to have more of a... You need to be able to do it with more of a zoomed in focus on exactly what you are looking for on that play and not have it be holding. Have it be something where it's like what you're saying, okay, throw this challenge flag as a face mask. I want you to look at it because I think there was a blatant face mask on this player. Like that I could see. But throwing a challenge flag and just going, I mean, somebody on the line had to have held, right?
Yeah, I think it's got to be on a scoring player. It's got to be inside the last 2 minutes of a game. Don't you think that makes a little bit more sense? And I'm just I'm arbitrarily saying the last 2 minutes of a game, even though they should get it right the entire game. I say that now only because of onside kicks, because now you have to declare an onside kick inside the last two, which I think is ridiculous too. But I don't know any other way around it. So if you can, start to dictate rules based on time of game, which is what that is, which I don't think we've ever had before, right?
We do, because you don't throw a challenge flag within 2 minutes.
Okay, so that and the fact that we have a 2 minute warning in itself is a
correct
is a man made
time based rule.
Yep. Yeah. So, but we don't have many of those. I do think on a scoring play, especially inside the last 2 minutes, it should be on any scoring play. I'll be honest with you, because the scoring play already has to be reviewed. So the question then again becomes, should a coach have to throw a flag on that if there is no flag, right?
But how deep do you go?
Well, I'm just, I mean, that was pretty egregious.
Right. That was egregious.
There's got to be is there a penalty that you could draw if you're wrong? If a coach is wrong.
Lose a timeout, especially if you're the team that's coming back. I mean, that's a...
In a two-minute situation, yeah. That would make you very hesitant on calling that.
That's a big one. Yeah. That'll leave a mark. The two things of this that I worry about when it comes to that is, one, more stoppages, because that's, to me, that's the last thing football needs. And I know everybody has always said, oh, yeah, well, you make it as long as you want. They're still going to watch. It's like, no, you hit a point after a while where you're like, this is dumb. This is never going to end. Can you please just make it end? Like, you will hit that point at some juncture. The second thing that I worry about is just, again, what I've said, the blatant just like, okay, here's the challenge flag. Holding, just find it. I hate that
you can't do. Yeah. Pass interference, though, obviously would be...
Now, PI, but that turned into a mess because that's such a judgmental play. They tried it for 1 year where you could throw the challenge flag for PI. And it was after the... it was the Saints contested catch.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they did it for 1 year after that, and they ended up getting rid of it because it was such a mess because it's such a judgmental thing. And so that's the only thing I'm there. Like, I would love to come on here and go,
all right, so
yes,
do you
this
buy,
is the solution, but I don't think there is one. I think you're just stuck.
Can you buy into letting a coach throw a challenge flag on a scoring play that may have resulted based on a personal foul that wasn't called? That, to me, that's why I don't even think you should have to do that. I think that just by the nature of the fact that every play is reviewed, right? All scoring plays are reviewed. I'm sorry. That all scoring plays are reviewed, that if the guy in the booth or gal in the booth that sees it says, hey, guys, yes, it was a safety, but it was a safety because of face masking. It resulted in points. The personal foul resulted in points.
Yeah, that idea of it makes a lot of sense. Is that might be the caveat we're looking for, is that it turns into, all right, you can throw it, but it's only for personal fouls.
Now, I say forget it, but why even have to throw it? It should just come from the booth. That shouldn't even be questioned. The officials should say, hey, is it a clean scoring opportunity? Especially on a safety, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to see that on other... Although, what if someone gains leverage on another guy on a touchdown and it's face masking in that scenario too? You understand what I'm saying?
Right. It could go both ways.
Or an interception.
Yeah, it can go both ways. I think maybe you're right. Maybe the personal foul part of it is the way you look at it. Is that, hey, if there's a blatant personal foul on this, then we take a look at it and then we find what we're looking for. Or not what we're looking for, but then we take a look at it and we can overturn it. That makes some level of sense.
This results in scoring. That's why I think it's important.
Right. And trust me, it's not like this was the end-all be-all. Like, it was an 8-point game before then. They would have gotten the ball at the 20-yard... The Vikings would have gotten the ball at the 20-yard line. They would have had to go the length of the field with a 1:42 left on the clock, and they would have had to get the extra point.
And what would be the difference
two-point conversion, sorry, not extra point.
What would be the difference between that and a receiver that you were trying to figure out if they got 2 feet in bounds? Right? So on a touchdown, they'll call a touchdown, but they're also going to go back and review it because it's a scoring play.
Right.
And so in the booth, they're looking to see if they got 2 feet in. This is a scoring play that resulted because of a personal foul.
Right.
Because he was able to grab his helmet and bring him to the ground.
Right.
To cause the points. That should be overturned by the booth.
That makes sense.
That's exactly like having a receiver with 2 feet in bounds.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's the answer. is that it should be reviewed and it should be for a personal foul only, so that you get rid of this whole blanket, like, well, you know, maybe there was PI. Well, maybe there was some guy held. Maybe there was, like, you could get rid of all that nonsense. And it just comes down to the simple fact that it's like, look, we are looking for a blatant infraction that got missed on the field that could turn the direction a game
was going. That results in a scoring opportunity.
That results in a scoring opportunity. Beautiful. Ah, call us up. What other life problems we got? Let's go. We're on a roll.
Oh, I got another life problem. We got a couple of them we're going to talk about here coming up. Especially when it comes to carving pumpkins.
Give us your world problems. Let's go. We'll solve them.
And by the way, if you were in an NFL locker room, what would you want to eat? What do you want at halftime? Guess what? They did a poll. We're going to talk about that poll when we come back. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Brian Anderson joins us at high noon. It's Baskin and Phelps. 92. Let's just talk a little Halloween here for a second. I just want to kind of break things up before we have Brian Anderson come on. And he'll be on at noon, as he is every Friday. And Tim May, we'll talk to him at 1 o'clock about the Buckeyes. I don't know what's wrong with me today. I'm a little bit off.
It happens to the best of us.
I don't know.
You get those days every so often.
I got all fired up about the dome in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, you did. You did. All right. Have you bought your candy yet for Halloween? Has your wife bought candy yet for Halloween?
So I'm going to be honest with you, and I find this happening year after year, that when we buy the candy too early, it never makes it down.
It disappears.
Never makes it.
You know.
And then by the time you get to Halloween, the candy that you bought in the beginning is candy you would never want anyway. You wouldn't want it anymore because you ate so much of it before, you don't want it. So I am on a kind of a weird kick, and I don't know why, but like, I love vanilla Tootsie Rolls. They're like my favorite.
What?
I love vanilla Tootsie Rolls.
Oh my, those were the ones I gave away.
Oh, I love them.
Oh,
I don't
man.
Know why, but
where
I just
were you when I was a kid.
I don't know. I went out to that giant candy store a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I was in there with my daughter. I love going in there, man. You know why I love going in there? Because
find everything.
Well, they have a lot of candy from when I was a kid that you never see anymore. And so I'll walk through that. I'm like, oh man, I haven't seen that in forever. And just, I love going out there. But anyway, we've done some, you know, stuff outside the house, a little bit of Halloween stuff. I don't know, more fall stuff. And I had a friend, this was such a great deal. When the kids were real little, I don't know how they did it, but he had friends that would do these oversized pumpkins, like gigantic pumpkins. And when the kids were little, they would come home from school and there would always be a giant pumpkin in our front yard.
Oh, wow.
And we told them that the great pumpkin fairy was bringing pumpkins. And it was like... the kids would light, their faces would light up.
That's
cool. I mean, obviously I knew it was, but they would just light up every year when they would see
these
pumpkins.
That's a cool
idea. Oh, it's just, what a great idea. Just, and so cool, like kind of a cool thing to do for your neighbors. But I'm telling you, these pumpkins were not little pumpkins. They were big.
Big old monster ones.
Yeah, like I had to do a lot of work to get rid of them at the end of the year. But that was okay. It was worth it. It was totally worth it just to see the kids. And then I would call them and go like, and they would be like, oh, that's awesome. They loved the fact that it was such a really cool thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is typically the weekend we'll have the niece and nephew over to the estate, and we usually try to do it outside and let them go carve the pumpkins outside just to minimize the train wreck mess that takes place inside the house.
Okay.
So like I'm thinking this year, because last year I got duped, okay? And every parent, uncle, aunt that's out there understands what I'm talking about when I say duped. And by that, I mean the kid came over and they went, oh, I want to carve the pumpkin. And then they kind of helped design it. And then they ran away and you couldn't find them. So then you're sitting
especially
there.
Especially for cleanup?
Well, for cleanup, but for the actual carving process itself. Where they're like, look, it's my pumpkin. And in reality, everybody else had caught it. Now, the niece and nephew, they're 7 and 8 now. 8 and 7. Yeah. And so they're at that age where it's like still acceptable to start pulling that stuff of like, oh yeah, I want to design the pumpkin and then not actually carve it.
Oh, that never ends though. That never ends.
So what do I do to A, stop the duping? Because I am horrific at pumpkin carving. It is one of arts and crafts is my biggest flaw. If I had to pick one, I am horrible at arts and crafts. And is my biggest flaw, and the self-loathing comes with how bad I am at arts and crafts.
Right.
And so I don't want to have a bad afternoon followed by a bad Halloween of having to look at this thing and go, oh my God, did they let a third grader carve that thing? No, the 36-year-old man carved that one.
Yeah, I'm bad at that too. I know one year my wife and I went to a ceramic shop for our anniversary. We were looking for something fun to do, and we went to this really, really cool ceramics place on the east side, and we'd made mugs. And my wife's mug is like perfect, one that you would find at the store, and you could buy it. And mine, I'm going to take a picture of it. I'll put it out next week. It is so bad. It's as bad as, and if you ever get a chance, Saturday Night Live did a skit with Eddie Murphy last time he was on, and they did this, I don't know, it keeps coming up, this thing, but where the cakes that they made during this holiday cook-off,
right.
His cake was possessed, and like it set on fire. It was one of the worst cakes you've ever seen on Earth. That is what my mug looked like when it was all said and done. So I'm not there for arts and crafts either, just so you know that. But I will say this, like to me, when you look at these pumpkins and you see people are doing pumpkin carving, to me, like traditional couple triangles for eyes, triangle for nose, and then, you know, you do the triangle thing for teeth.
Your best chance at scary looking teeth.
Right? Yeah, like that's me, man. That's what I do. I get my Sharpie out. I draw a couple triangles on there. You get the little like saw that you get with the kit. Now, like a few years back, then, especially when the kids were little, my wife is just spectacular at this stuff. She's great at it. She's just got... She's outstanding.
Yeah, opposites attract.
And I am like the worst
ever. The lady friend's the same way. She's like arts and crafts and can make all this stuff look awesome. And I'm like, look, I got a circle that's kind of circular.
But I know where the button is on the garbage disposal, know how to reset it. So that's my claim to fame. But so, you know, to me, that's what a pumpkin should be. Get in there and do that. So like I was watching on Instagram the other day, some family, you know, like I get fascinated by watching some of these reels where, you know, they take you through the whole thing, like, oh, I did this, I did that. But I think if you need a drill or an electric saw to make a pumpkin, that's out of bounds, man. That takes all the fun out of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like the thing with
pumpkin watching somebody
carving.
Take a drill and they're like drilling holes into this pumpkin, I'm like, what? This is not real. You're cheating a little bit.
This is supposed to, like, this is supposed to knock you down a few notches. This isn't supposed to be like, now all of a sudden, here is my Mona Lisa on the side of a pumpkin. Like, we're not doing this. You're 100% right. If you're doing that whole thing where you're shaving stuff and you've got the Dremel and all of that kind of stuff to get a pumpkin out, it's like, what are we doing here? This should require power tools. You're supposed to use either the kit that you get at the store or the big old kitchen knife, depending on how lazy and dangerous you want to live life. And just go to town and hope for the best. I'm with you on this. Like, unless we're doing one of these, like, TV shows where they're judging pumpkins and people are talking into the camera, which just makes me want to barf. Like, there's no point with this. There's absolutely no point with this whatsoever. I'm with you.
Okay, agree. let me take this to the next level then, okay? Neighbors who do the blow-up things on their front lawn.
Okay.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. I have neighbors that did it. And I know they have a little kid over there, and they've got like all the classic Charlie Brown characters, Peanuts. I think it's awesome. I love it. I mean, I think it's really cool.
I'm cool with it. It's not for me, but it's one of those, if it brings you joy, I'm thrilled for you.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
That's how I am. Yeah. It's not my kind of thing, but I'm glad it makes you happy, and therefore go be happy.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't know, the over-the-top graveyard stuff, it's like,
That's where I am with
Although
all
Although I'm the same way with all holidays. Like
all
that.
Halloween decorations are the same way. It's like, man, if that brings you happiness, then go do it. Look, again, we told the story a couple weeks ago. I now have no room to say anything, Andy. I have a 5-foot penguin that's going to be in front of my house.
What?
I have no room to say anything. Oh, yeah, we told that story before where I had to go to the giant box
store. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Like, my perspective on all this stuff has changed because Christmas is going to come and I'm going to have this monstrosity in my front yard. And so it's like, forget it. I can't judge anybody because I'm the worst offender of all of it.
All right, pumpkin seeds, good or bad?
Roasted, love them.
Love them. Same thing, man. Yeah. Totally into it. Yes.
Yeah.
Little salt on there. Good to go. I could eat them all day.
I'm the only one in my house that'll eat them, so we don't end up doing a bunch of them. So,
the store-bought ones are a little tough because they're super salty.
Yes. They're too salty.
I do like those, though.
So, speaking of store-bought.
Yeah.
A store-bought thing has found its way into NFL locker rooms like you wouldn't believe. This is a piece that came out of The Athletic that absolutely blew me away. They did one a couple years ago where they talked about how the NFL has a rule where teams are required to provide 3 dozen orange slices at halftime. And that is still the case, that inside of NFL locker rooms at halftime, there are 3 dozen orange slices there for everybody.
But as long as they don't have powdered donuts, that's good.
But the other thing that is starting to take off are Uncrustables. For those of you who don't know, they are made by Smucker's. And they're those circular, you can get them in the frozen food section. They're those circular peanut butter and jelly sandwiches without crusts on them.
Can I just tell you what my dad said the first time I ever saw those?
Do tell.
He looked at me and he said, are people so lazy that they can't make their own peanut butter and jelly? Have we hit that point that people are so lazy they can't make their own peanut butter and jelly? And then you got to cut off the crust.
Well, apparently that's the case in the NFL because they went over this to all of the teams. And this is according to The Athletic. Based on the information they've collected, it is safe to say that NFL teams go through anywhere between 3,600 to 4,300 Uncrustables a week.
NFL teams, now is this in the CBA?
No, this isn't in the CBA. This has just become the new preferred snack that NFL players are having, including saying, and this is according to The Athletic, that NFL teams go through at least 80,000 Uncrustables a year. 80,000 Uncrustables a year. The Cleveland Browns, per week, from what they have here, from the data that they've collected in this piece, eat 120 Uncrustables a week.
Wait, each player?
No. As a collective unit.
So you're saying they eat 120 a week. That's
correct.
All? That doesn't seem that crazy.
Doesn't seem that crazy. The Denver Broncos are at 700 a week that they eat.
That's the peanut butter, right?
Of the Uncrustables. Oh,
is
yeah.
it the protein well, you want from the peanut butter?
And the sugar as well. They kind of you know, help give you a little bit of energy on top of it. But yeah, of all the things that these players are choosing, and the fact that we've got dietitians and we know more about the human body than we ever have, the go-to snack for NFL players... it's become a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Well, what's the go-to after the game refresher? You know what the they'll tell you, at least.
Cold beer and a cigarette?
No, the state of Ohio is into this too.
Cold beer and a cigarette?
Chocolate,
cold beer and a joint?
Chocolate milk.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, runners. Marathon runners. At the tail end of marathons, they hand them that.
Chocolate milk. See, some of the things you ate when you were a kid are still good for you.
Heck yeah.
Especially if you're an athlete, which means I probably shouldn't.
So there you go. Rolling into the lunch hour, get yourself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a glass of chocolate milk, and you'll be like an NFL player.
It's not bad.
Worst ways to live life.
That's true. The chocolate milk things. But, you know, the sports teams that I've been around for like the last 10 years always have that around. Always have Uncrustables around. In fact, like there's a lot of sign-up sheets that I've seen over the last 10, 15 years that one of the things that they ask parents to bring are boxes of Uncrustables. Same thing. So I'm not surprised by any of that.
Track
Maybe
meets.
Part of that is, yeah, track
All
meets too.
Track
yeah.
meets. Yeah.
That's a good point. All right. I'm glad we could fulfill your time and let you know what people are eating. When we come back, Brian Anderson, Rays color commentator, pride in Northeast Ohio. We'll talk Guardians with him. We're also going to talk Nebraska, his football team, as they get set to take on Ohio State. And, of course, we'll talk about the World Series with him. Brian Anderson coming up next. Tim May at 1 o'clock.